Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we are a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a handshake still means something.
GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Good afternoon. It's 17 after 12, and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on the program today, if you were with me on Friday, I told you that Patty Miller was stepping down. She's the chief commissioner with the Canadian Grain Commission, and she announced to staff at the Grain Commission last week that she'd be stepping down from that position in June. So I spoke with Patty Miller this morning, and I said, what's up with that? She'll explain why she's made that decision to call it quits with the Canadian Grain Commission. Also on the program today, and again, I hearken back to this past Friday's program when we spoke with Marilyn Braun-Polin from the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. I believe on Friday we spoke about the blockades, certainly a timely issue. Also, I discussed a recent survey that the Canadian Federation of Independent Business conducted among farmers regarding the carbon tax. And we'll hear Marilyn Braun-Polin's take on that. She'll give us some details and results from that survey and offer some comment on it as well. And, of course, we'll have the latest on the blockades. They started coming down. Some of them were dismantled, but with that, as one was dismantled in Ontario, I believe another blockade went up in the Montreal area. So we'll get the latest on the blockade situation coming up on the program today as well. First, though, the Agriculture Weather Outlook. It's a presentation of Yorkton Raymore and Watrous, New Holland, and Sean Prahika, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And now, Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. These spring-like conditions, are they likely to continue a little while longer, Phil?
Well, yeah. The cold air that's coming in through the week is just a little bit below average. It's hardly cold, and it only lasts for a couple of days. So by the end, we're right back above normal, pretty close to freezing by Friday. So while it ebbs and flows a bit, overall, we're into a pretty nice stretch of weather for this week. Today, sunshine, a few clouds will move in from the southwest as the day goes on, especially into the evening and overnight. Temperature today near minus 4, not much wind. The wind will pick up just a bit as well, from around 6 to 12 this afternoon to around 8 to 16, averaging near 10 tonight. But with the cloud cover, there could even be a couple of flurries overnight. We drop off to minus 13. The core of the moisture from the system really hangs on the other side of the border, so eastern Montana into parts of North Dakota, and then scraping along the Trans-Canada. That's where the best chance is for snow tonight. We've just got a couple of flurries with a weak disturbance picking some of that up from the north. Minus 13 the low tonight, minus 7 the high tomorrow. Any flurries that do set up through the night should be gone pretty early tomorrow. A lot of cloud cover remains, though, behind tomorrow near minus 7. For tomorrow night, again, there's another disturbance that'll be cutting across. This one tracks in from the north and grazes us from the north. They're just like this next system where we have a secondary system to the north. There is a secondary disturbance to the south, and that's going to pull some of the moisture down. The end result being the same as tonight is a few flurries come in late in the night into the very early morning hours on Tuesday. Slight chance, pegging it at about 20%, while areas well north, Hudson Bay north especially, get a little more snow for Tuesday night. We drop off, though, with this system to minus 22. Some cold air gets pulled southward, and we're a little bit cooler, more slightly below average, we'll call it, on Wednesday. Minus 12. Still pretty cloudy. A few flurries come in through the night. This time, the system will track straight across the province. One misses south, one misses north. Thursday's is just right. Still not very moisture loaded. Just a couple of flurries in the afternoon, the high near minus 7. But that is a warm front. And behind that warm front, we've got some more mild air, at least a day or two worth Friday, we're partly sunny near zero, and we're likely in that warm air for Saturday, too.
All right, thank you, Phil. Now, this hour's temperature roundup, it's minus 8 in La Paw, minus 6 this hour in Swan River, minus 3 in Dauphin, Brandon, minus 9, Shoal Lake Russell, Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, all minus 7 degrees, minus 12 in Roblin, minus 13 in Saskatoon, minus 1 in Regina, minus 4 for Broadview and Mooseman, and minus 5 in Indian Head. In the Yorkton-Melville region, partly cloudy. The wind is light west-northwest at about 4. Relative humidity 78%. Our temperature up 2 degrees in the past hour, now minus 8. Yesterday's high and low, 0 and minus 12. Normals for this date, daytime highs around minus 7. Overnight lows near minus 17. Yellowgrass North, the warmest place in Saskatchewan yesterday, getting up to plus 3. Stony Rapids, the provincial cold spot, at minus 22. As we cross the border into Manitoba, Cross Lake Genpeg hit 4 degrees, and the Manitoba cold spot to Dooley Lake, minus 24. Sunrise this morning was at 7:46. The sun will set tonight at 20 after 6. Again, our current temperature is minus 8. It's 12:23, a quick break, and we're right back on GX on Agriculture after this. The Canadian Federation of Independent Business has some facts and figures to pass along to Federal Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau. The CFIB surveyed farmers on the carbon tax and the impact it's having on farm operations. CFIB Vice President for Western Canada and Agribusiness, Marilyn Braun-Polin, says given the challenging harvest last year, ongoing trade disputes, and the threat of a prolonged rail disruption, they're urging Agriculture Minister Bibeau to address farmers' serious concerns about the carbon tax.
We did a survey back in January. It was open till February the 18th. It's based on a really strong sample size right across the country. We asked some specific questions about energy and the environment, but also some specifics around the carbon tax and the impact on the ag sector. And so we did have strong response from Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario. We wanted to provide direct feedback from our farm members to the minister. I mean, she has requested data from the industry on how the federal carbon tax is impacting the farming community. So we wanted to make sure that we provided that that detail and that data, and it is it's pretty compelling. I mean, this is we've been all hearing it from farmers for months and months about the huge hit to their bottom line as the cost from a federal carbon tax just continues to mount, especially after a challenging harvest this past fall and the millions of acres that are left to harvest this spring. We felt it important to ask our members to quantify that, but also ask them some specific questions of, can they actually pass the cost on to their customers, and also their views of the environment and what they're already doing to lessen their environmental impact. We know ag has done a lot in that arena. So, I mean, the fact that 82% of our farm members say that the federal carbon tax is negatively impacting their business, that's a pretty compelling stat. But when you look at the sectoral breakout in the grain sector, it's 94% of our farmers saying it's having a negative impact, 93% in the livestock sector. And then you look at the cost. On average, farmers are looking at paying almost $14,000 in federal carbon taxes in the first year. That's a significant impact as well.
Farmers' patience is running thin. Ron Poland notes the CFIB and farm organizations have been pressing the government to give farmers a break on the carbon tax for the past year.
This is not a new story. It's just that we're trying to quantify the impact. I mean, we've been hearing it for the last year. I mean, we first put this on the radar back last spring, with the minister calling for those carbon tax exemptions for farming operations, back in April. And we said, you need to extend these exemptions to include natural gas, propane, that are used, for drying grain or heating barns you know, they're desperately needed. And so, you know, we've been, any time that we've, you know, had a news release about the ag sector and the challenges, the carbon tax is the number one thing that we need the government to act on. And so, you know, we've been hearing from our members of farm members about the mounting costs of the federal carbon tax, and it's taking a real bite out of their bottom line. You know, just the number of challenges. I mean, they're just mounting. The challenging harvest last year, the ongoing trade disputes, and now the threat of a prolonged rail disruption. So we need the minister to listen, but we also need the minister to act. And, you know, the thing is that clearly in our research it shows, you know, and we got hundreds of comments from our members and you know, the number one message is that, look, at as a farmer I'm a price taker, and these carbon taxes the costly carbon tax is actually you know, hamstring my ability to compete. So, you know, at the end of the day, our main message to the minister is that the federal carbon tax isn't effective, and it's punishing farmers with these significant costs that really make them less profitable and competitive on the world stage. So we're hoping the minister is going to you know, to look at this data. It is compelling data, and we hope that she will listen and the government will act quickly.
Ron Poland says farmers also take issue with the federal government charging GST on top of the carbon tax.
To add insult to injury, the GST, you know, charged on the federal carbon tax, it's frustrating when they see that line item on their propane and natural gas. So it's no surprise that 93% of farmers believe that the government shouldn't be charging that GST. But when you look at the different sectors, analyzing the different sectors, you know, when you look at the grain, you know, in the grain sector, but also livestock sector, you know, 98% of our members are just saying, look, we shouldn't be charging, have a tax on a tax, and that's something that we could see movement on as well. But you know, I think when you look at it too, the government's you know, assumptions that businesses can just pass it on to their customers. Well, farmers can't pass the federal carbon tax on to their customers. And so, you know, we found that about 83% of our grain farmers say that they'd only be able to pass on less than 10% of the carbon tax on to their customers. So it leaves about 78% of them having to eat the entire cost. And so when you see these number of costs piling on, it is taking a toll, you know, and so that's why we're recommending that these exemptions need to be applied to propane, natural gas, and aviation fuel used for these farming activities. And so time will tell, but we do need to see action soon.
Marilyn Braun Poland is Vice President for Western Canada and Agribusiness with the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. The CFIB recently surveyed farmers on the carbon tax and the impact it's having on farm operations. It's 12:30 now, and time for AgriView, a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we are a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a handshake still means something.
GX94, AgriView.
A rail blockade near Belleville, Ontario, was dismantled this morning by Ontario Provincial Police. That blockade has crippled rail traffic in eastern Canada for more than 2 weeks. Local Mohawks set up the blockade in solidarity with anti-pipeline protests in northern BC. A handful of protesters were handcuffed and loaded into a police vehicle this morning. Police are making arrests, but say use of force is a last resort. This was the reaction a short time ago by Federal Transport Minister Mark Garneau.
We are committed to reconciliation, and we are committed to sitting down, having a dialogue over the specific problem that exists at the moment with the Wet'suwet'en. But at the same time, the barricades had to come down, and because it was having a profound effect on the economy.
Meantime, ships are waiting for grain at the West Coast, and elevators are beginning to push back producer deliveries. Rick White is CEO of the Canadian Canola Growers Association.
Right now, we're looking at, you know, well over 50 ships waiting for grain in Vancouver as a result of this. There's 60,000 rail car orders still outstanding because of this. That equates to about 5.4 million tons of grain that is yet to be shipped. And country elevators are starting to get filled up. And so this is very, very serious. And even though the blockades do come down, it causes havoc, I guess, in terms of fluidity of the system. And we're damaging our reputation as a reliable seller of grains and oilseeds.
White believes these protester blockades have been even more damaging than the recent strike at CN Rail.
Farmers kind of took it on the chin then with the labor strike from CN. We've had some winter issues. We've had a few derailments and these blockades that go up. All these things have been made it quite economically damaging to farmers' bottom lines, because if they can't move their grain and we can't get it sold and can't be a reliable seller, this not only causes problems for the here and now for farmers, but also long-term relationships with customers around the world. It's very serious, and you know, farmers are the ones that ultimately pay the price.
Rick White is CEO of the Canadian Canola Growers Association. The Ag Transport Coalition reports CN and CP Rail supplied a combined 52% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 28. That was up from 45% in Grain Week 27. Of course, the blockades impacting. A decline in performance on CN was offset by an increase in performance on CP. CN's performance was below the 90% threshold for the sixth consecutive week, supplying just 32% of cars ordered. CP's performance increased, supplying 74% of cars ordered compared to 60% the prior week. CN and CP combined entered Grain Week 29 with 1,121 outstanding cars, down over 1,000 from the previous week. The change represents a decline in the number of outstanding hopper cars on both CN and CP by 862 and 198, respectively. Grain markets are taking a significant hit today. Commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina, Adam Puccolo, says rising concern about the impact of the coronavirus is affecting markets around the world.
More cases have been popping up, not only in China, but now it has spread more globally to Japan, South Korea, and there's certain countries that are closing their borders, like Italy as well, finding more and more actual cases and infections. So last week, overall, the grain markets didn't react too much to the actual outbreaks. However, it's here on the Monday that we are starting to see kind of more weakness in the market. So overall, grains are down quite a bit here this morning, with canola down about $7, Chicago wheat down about $12, Minneapolis down about $7, and soybeans down about 14 cents too. And there's quite a few other things that are happening too, with notably oil down about $2.50, and the stock markets are down quite heavily too. So I think this week going forward is going to be important to see really how much there is going to be more of this downtrend. I'm watching Chicago wheat quite closely, because the funds do have a large long position in, and if they do decide to start liquidating that, we could see more downside in that market. This week also too, the nearby March futures are going to have ceased trading, so that will be now the May contract on the grain contracts will be the near by month. So oftentimes some kind of interesting things can happen here with kind of the end of the futures contracts on the nearby months.
Why is the coronavirus having such a dramatic impact on markets, Adam?
One of the biggest reasons is demand and global growth. So as we know, how much China actually does buy from the U.S. And kind of elsewhere as well too. So I would say if you're just specifically asking on the grain side of things, there's one scenario is think of just what happened recently with the phase one deal. China mentioned that they're going to start buying more from the U.S. They recently just cut all of their tariffs on meat products, and that was very positive. You know, we start to see a bit of an uptick in the grains. However, now with, you know, a possible slowing of their economy, that worries what will happen possibly going forward. So that's where we are starting to see some movement towards safe haven assets like gold. Gold has gone up about $100 in the last week, and as well as the U.S. dollar. So the U.S. dollar is an interesting one to watch too for Canadians, because it obviously impacts the Canadian dollar. So actually, Trump's approval rating and the U.S. dollar have about a 70% correlation. So the U.S. dollar has been steadily climbing because U.S. approval, Trump's approval rating has been climbing too. So going forward, the coronavirus has a lot of ripple effects throughout the market.
Adam Puccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. Federal Agriculture Minister Marie Clabebeau stressed predictable rules and science-based trade during meetings with U.S., Mexican, and Argentinian counterparts in Washington, D.C. last week. Bebeau says the Western Hemisphere Agricultural Group, also known as Ag5, represents almost a quarter of global exports and is working to develop solutions to regulatory challenges. Bebeau also underscored that the new NAFTA is a key priority for Canada and that the government is committed to working with parliamentarians and Canadian stakeholders to implement it as quickly as possible. Bebeau also participated in a panel discussion at the USDA's 96th Annual Agricultural Outlook Forum, where she talked about supporting science and risk-based regulatory environments, as well as preparedness for African swine fever. The Manitoba Flax Growers Association is predicting a larger crop this year if there's enough seed available. Chairman Eric Fridmanson says acres were up about 10% last year. He says bad weather affected some producers, but people who harvested top quality flax stand to make some good money. He says right now people are paying about $14 a bushel for flax. The association is one of five commodity groups in Manitoba that will be merging this year. Keystone Agricultural Producers has launched a rural connectivity survey. CAP says the survey is aimed at better understanding the issues facing both cellular coverage and broadband access across the province. CAP Director Sam Connery-Nickel says CAP members are some of the most poorly served by telecommunications in the country because they live and run their businesses in rural areas with limited population density. He says Manitobans in rural areas are missing out on key information, including emergency alerts, and are often unable to call for help on their farms due to a lack of cell coverage. CAP notes a lack of access to reliable, affordable broadband internet prevents farmers from being able to take advantage of educational opportunities and technological advances that would make their operations more efficient and ultimately more successful. CAP is encouraging both farmers and non-farmers to participate in the survey. The deadline is March the 31st. And that is today's Ag Review. It's coming up on 18 before 1.
Livestock market conditions.
Well, as Adam Puccolo from PI Financial mentioned just moments ago, commodity markets are down today. April live cattle trading this afternoon at $1.1525. That should be 100 weight. That's down $3. June live cattle $107.27, also down $3. April feeder cattle $137.60, down $4.50. May feeder cattle $138.35, also down $4.50. April lean hogs $64.77, down 225. And May lean hogs, 71.87, and that's down 215. And those are the latest U.S. livestock futures. We'll check on the grain prices here in about 7 minutes or 7 minutes or so from, or thereabouts at about 10 to 1. Pork producers across the country are being invited to participate in an economic and environmental viability survey. Dr. Mario Tenuta is a professor of applied soil ecology in the University of Manitoba's Department of Soil Science. He says the survey will be rolled out across the country over the next few weeks.
What really caused us to put together this project was a need to validate studies that had been done recently that has showed the efficiency and the environmental footprint of pig production in the United States and in Canada to decrease over the past 30 years. Now, that research is very interesting because it is saying that we're moving in a direction which is more environmentally friendly, and the production means are more economically efficient. So that's a good trajectory. It's something that we would like to continue to see. But we also wanted to do an analysis which was based on more regional-based information from producers involving their production systems and how animals are moving through the production systems and the resources used to produce the pig production. So that was really the cause here. So we're trying to get the fine-tune and get real data of the snapshot currently of the state of pig production in Canada, and then take that analysis even further for the future.
Tenuta says the survey is part of a five-year study.
And we're about a quarter of the way through the project at the moment. So we've done our background work of seeing what's been done in the past in terms of understanding the environmental footprint and efficiency of pig production in Canada and elsewhere in the world. And so we've used that those past works to design a survey that we've tested and just about to roll out right across the country for pig producers and barn managers to help us figure out the state of pig production efficiencies and resource uses. And then the project will then move to the footprint analysis using life cycle analysis. And then from there, we will do various scenarios of practices, changes in practices, and see their impacts on the production efficiency and resource use, reducing that footprint. We are will be conducting case studies in Quebec and in Manitoba of going to particular barns and to obtain data in the barns, for example, in energy use, energy efficiency. We'll be implementing a biofilter in one barn in Manitoba to see about the reduction in odor and if that changes the, for example, electricity requirements for ventilation. And then we'll wrap all this together with a regional analysis and do a comparison of pig production about 30 years ago, and then we'll do some forecasting in terms of what would be practices that would give us a best bang to reduce the footprint, resource footprint for pig production for different regions in Canada.
How long is the survey and what type of questions does it include?
We are targeting about a 40-minute survey for respondents. They will need to have some basic information about their production system. such as their feed, their ration, number of animals on average that would be through their barns. We're looking at the 2018 production year. There'll be some, we're hoping to get information on water use, energy use, and manure storage and application, so we can know about the throughput of manure and to crops and the rations, and also if they've produced any of the ration ingredients themselves on their farm. So it's quite encompassing, and there'll be, yeah, so it covers everything really. And but I would say in terms of the greatest detail is actually the number of animals in a barn at any given time that belong to certain production classes, in terms of sows, the reproductive herd, weaners, and finishers. Okay, and so we want to know not just the number, but also the time. So how many days are they in particular stages? So we need to really get that kind of detailed information, because the production efficiencies and resource use will be quite dependent on the number of days of animals in a particular stages.
And finally, we asked Dr. Tanuta how the survey results will benefit the industry.
Well, firstly, we're hoping pig farmers in Canada are going to benefit from, first of all, seeing what the changes that they've done and have witnessed over time, that what those practical implications, significance of them in terms of resource use and production efficiency. So saying, you know, we're able to market more protein or carcass weights than we did 30 years ago, and we're doing that by using less resources. So I think that's going to probably be a big outcome, and then they're going to be able to see that what be some of the options for making further gains in terms of the efficiency and resource use. So, yeah, so the producers are a big target here. We're also targeting the general Canadian public to know how their food is being produced, and that the efforts that have been made and can be made in the future to further improve the environmental benefit and in the future of pig production. So we're hoping the general public will also user of the information.
Dr. Mario Tanuta is a professor in the University of Manitoba's Department of Soil Science. And we'll check the grain prices coming up next.
Commodities update.
Grain and oil seed prices down across the board. May canola, $460.50, down $6.90. July canola, $467.70, down $6.60. May Minneapolis wheat, $5.28¾ a bushel, down 9.5 cents. May Kansas City wheat, $4.62 a bushel, down 13.5. May Chicago wheat, $5.35¼, down 16.75 cents. May corn, $3.76¾, down 4 cents. May soybeans, $8.85¼, down 13.75. And May oats, $2.89¼. That's down 8¾ cents. And those are the latest grain prices. It's 7 now before 1. And finally on the program today, and in the words of Hall and Oates, she's gone. Canadian Grain Commission Chief Commissioner Patty Miller has announced she'll be stepping down in June. I asked her why.
That's a question that people have asked me recently, and it's a really simple answer, actually. It's 35 years in the industry. So for me, you know, you start to, when you hit these anniversaries, you start to reflect and think about what you want to do and where you want to spend your time. And for me, it was just time to retire and focus a little bit on some other aspects of my life.
Miller was appointed to a 6-year term as chief commissioner in 2017. Was it your intention to serve out the full term?
You know, when you started the job, I certainly wasn't thinking about exactly how long I was going to stay here. I was, you know, thinking about the challenges in front of the organization and what I could do to make a difference. And I think we've made a lot of progress inside the organization. We've done a lot to modernize within our current legislative and regulatory framework. There's lots more to do, but I think the organization itself is in a good place, and I'm happy with what we've accomplished. So, you know, there'll be somebody else to fill in behind me and carry on.
What are some of the highlights of your time with the Canadian Green Commission?
For me, the highlight is always working with the people. This is a tremendous organization, and the staff here are so dedicated to the industry. And it's been a real honor to work beside them and learn from them and really have a deeper understanding of how the Grain Act and the Grain Commission work to support the system. So I can't consider that an accomplishment, but that's certainly one of the biggest things that I've appreciated in my time here. I think as well, I mean, it had been so many years that the organization ran with a very limited budget, and so we have spent money on a couple of projects out of the surplus to help with some specific things that the industry was interested in doing some more research on. But I think there's we're really setting the organization up for more modernization and to be able to operate more effectively in today's industry. Just looking at getting ready to, change some of the information technology that we're using so that we can respond to people more quickly and more effectively. So there's a lot of things like that. The wheat class modernization, grain grading modernization. There have been a lot of projects that have been tackled that are still ongoing, and we're doing what we can within the current legislation.
What sort of challenges will your successor face?
There's still a big task in front of us. When the government is ready, there will be legislative renewal at some point, and so being around and going through the discussions and the consultations as they unfold and helping make some of those some of the analysis that needs to be done to support that. I think that's the biggest challenge, the legislative review.
And do you have any advice for your successor?
I think the important thing to remember in this position is that, you know, you're working with a commission to provide the strategic leadership for an organization. And it's hard sometimes when you want to dig right into the day-to-day operations, but at a commission level, it's the overall strategy and the leadership of the organization that's the most important thing.
Finally, I asked Miller about her retirement plans.
Well, I'm going to do some traveling that doesn't involve boardrooms. And do a little more kayaking and cycling, catch up on reading some literature, things like that. Just relax for a little bit.
Patty Miller is the Canadian Grain Commission's chief commissioner. She'll be retiring in June. And we'll close out GX on Agriculture with our precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Partly sunny this afternoon, wind north-northwest 10 to 15, high minus 4. Cloudy tonight, there is a 30% chance of late flurries, wind north-northwest 10 to 20, overnight low minus 13. Continuing cloudy tomorrow, again, 30% chance of flurries at least early in the day. Wind north-northwest, 15 to 25, high minus 7. Continuing cloudy Wednesday. Southeast wind, 10 to 20, minus 12. Cloudy, 30% chance of late-day flurries Thursday, high minus 7. Then partly sunny as we near the weekend on Friday, and we'll shoot for a high on Friday near zero. On this hour's temperature roundup, minus 8 in the Paw, minus 6 in Swan River, Dauphin, minus 3, Brandon, minus 9, minus 7 in Shoal Lake, Russell, Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, and Calvington, minus 12 in Rockland, minus 13 in Saskatoon, Regina, minus 1, Broadview, Mooseman, minus 4, Indian Head, minus 5. In the Yorkton-Melville region, it's partly sunny, the wind is light, relative humidity 78%, and our temperature minus 8. That's it for today. Join me again tomorrow afternoon at 12:15 for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.